This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Earth Matters on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. The recent degazetting of 4,515 hectares of permanent forest reserves in Terengganu has caused great alarm. The degazetted forest reserves, roughly the size of more than 4,500 football fields, are to be given to the Terengganu government-linked company, TDM Berhad, for their plantation expansion. Joining me now is the Malaysian Nature Society Terengganu branch chairman Wong Chi Ho to lay out some of the implications of this degazettment. Hi, Chi Ho, how are you today?
How are you, Juliet? I'm fine today. Thanks for the call.
Thank you so much. You know, joining us all the way from Terengganu, that's why the sound is a bit like this, but thank you so much for making the time. So, Chi Ho, just to start off with, maybe you can tell us a little bit about the work of MNS Terengganu and, you know, the kind of stuff that you have been working on.
For sure. As you know, we do have Malaysian Nature Society at the national level, but whereas at the branch, at the state level, we do have a group of people who are volunteer, who love nature, and we are a group of people that concern about the environment, and all the time we try to educate to the public the importance of nature. So basically, this is what we're doing.
Okay, and what is your own personal background? Are you also involved in conservation?
Actually, I'm a lecturer myself. Mm-hmm. I'm working with University of Malaysia, Terengganu.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, I'm interested in the sustainable development as well as the wildlife conservation for my profession.
Okay, all right. And yep. have you been involved with the MNS for a long time?
Yeah, on and off, because since more than 10 years ago, I think with Malaysian Nature Society.
Okay, all right. So, I mean, the recent, you know, degazettment of these permanent forest reserves in Terengganu, that's a lot. That's 4,515 hectares. Maybe you could just kind of bring us up to speed about, you know, when that announcement was made and, you know, what this actually means.
Okay, the degazettment actually was on the newspaper, I think a few days ago, from, it's actually... it's a degazettment where a forested land that will be no longer classified as a protected forest area and to be perhaps to be taken by the private sectors or any company for any coming, most of the time that will be agriculture, plantation and so on. So it means that it will cause perhaps damage to the ecosystem as a whole.
Yep.
So this is quite a serious in terms of the impact to the ecosystems.
Have you been witnessing, you know, as somebody who I assume you also live in Terengganu, have you been witnessing a lot of deforestation happening?
Deforestation in Terengganu, I think, I reckon, from my personal point of view, is still kind of like under, you know, control.
Yep.
But most of the deforestation, it will be patchy, you know, where you might have a certain plot that have been logged and so on, but not in a very large scale, I reckon.
Okay. So this is something, this is quite big. This deforestation that is set to happen is actually quite a big deal then, I would say.
It will be, if you want to compare, it's roughly like 1%. 1% of the forest that what Terengganu has. So by 1%, to our point of view, it might be small. But in terms of the impact, there will be, you know, being suffered by the local the most. Whereas the people out there, it might be seen is non-significant. But it's for the local, they will have feel the they will feel the impact directly. Soon the forest go.
Mm-hmm. The degazettment of forest reserves, you know, something that's already been reserved, it goes against the UN Sustainable Development Goals, for example, our pledges, which was to halt deforestation by 2020, right?
Yes, yeah, definitely. But I'm not sure, before we have a further discussion with the state, but we will be more interested to know what is actually behind, okay, the plan. Mm-hmm. To have that forest reserve to be gazetted. Because definitely, as all we know, the deforestation, it could actually, is actually against what our sustainable development, especially want to achieve it by 2020.
And the thing is that I was reading that TDM Berhad, it's if you could explain to me, you know, it's government-linked, you were saying?
It's a state government-linked company.
Okay. And and I understand that they're also a member of the Roundtable on Sustainable Palm Oil, the RSPO?
Yes. I think most, if not all the big oil plantation player in Malaysia, actually they are all been certified by, you know, the Roundtable of oil of the Sustainable Oil Palm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, same for the TDM as well.
Right. And you know, one of RSPO's main missions is to actually minimize tropical deforestation.
Yeah, one of the main goal of the ISOP, because it's to maintain a sustainable oil plantation industry, because under the this sustainable policy, so means that no forested to be no forested land to be cleared for any oil palm plantations activities. Otherwise, they will have their certification to be revoked.
So,
and also to lose their access to the oil plantation markets.
Yeah, so I mean, there are, I mean, what do you see are the implications of this? Because this is rainforest, virgin rainforest that is going to be, well, there's going to be cut down. And
this I cannot confirm 100% whether it's primary or the virgin forest.
Okay.
But if you look on the map of the satellite imaginary map, you will see it's actually is a very big. If it's not, it should be at least a secondary forest.
I see.
And it's actually intact to a much bigger forest.
Mm-hmm.
It might actually helping to sustain the wildlife and also the fauna inside the forest.
So, like you mentioned earlier, it's only about 1%, which, you know, seems like a little bit. But what are the implications of, you know, losing that whole chunk, you know, 4,000 over hectares? You know, what is the implications on the local flora and fauna?
Oh, okay. 1%, you know, right? 1%, we see the figures might not tell us the importance, but if we look down as a red sign or the micro scale, it actually can give us a lot of very significant the benefit of the forest that will be very significant in terms of the, you know, the nutrient cycles, the flood mitigations, and also water security, when and so on, and much more of the service, which I cannot elaborate a little bit, you know, very extensively unless we have the time.
Mm-hmm.
But if we have that piece of the forest, even 1%, it actually can give you a cascade impact. Firstly, we will see the flood might come more often during the monsoon especially.
Mm-hmm.
And we have wildlife coming out and attack or maybe conflict in the sense that the local that might have, you know, encountered with the wildlife and even wildlife might get killed on the road and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And these are some of the impact that we can expect once we have, even though a small patch of the forest, but it actually can give us a very significant impact, especially to the local at that scale.
And we've actually been seeing, you know, I mean, it's interesting that you mentioned, you know, conflict between wildlife and humans, because we've actually been seeing a lot of forest areas which had been cut, you know, animals getting knocked down or, you know, animals getting killed in, you know, in all these conflicts, right? Like we've been seeing quite a lot of that happening. Yeah, so I guess something like this is just going to kind of add to that, pretty much, yeah?
So we will get all wildlife, we will be out of the forest, and if they're lucky, they might find somewhere else, but probably they need a large patch of a forest. For instance, one of the forest reserves to be degazetted, that will be the Rasau Kerteh.
Right.
If you remember correctly, and just last year, there was one tiger, a pregnant female tiger that been hit by a vehicle.
Yes, I remember.
Actually, there's a place adjacent to the reserve. So if we're expecting that piece of reserve to be further locked, you can tell, you know, even more of this incident will happen. But it's not to say it's the risk for the wildlife, but at the same time, if you're looking at another perspective, people's life might be, you know, at risk as well, especially those, the highway user. You're not going to tell what you bump into the next day.
Yeah, exactly.
Especially at night, where the animals, they are quite active at night, and you might bump into those wildlife, so it might cause actually collateral damage for both.
Yep.
So just for a long run, so it will give a lot of impact of this, what we call the human-wildlife crisis.
I'm speaking today to Wong Chi Ho. He is the branch chairman of the Malaysian Nature Society's Terengganu branch, and we are discussing the Terengganu government's plans to degazette over 4,500 hectares of permanent forest reserves in the state to make way for palm oil plantations. We'll find out what this could mean for the flood-prone state after this quick break. You are listening to Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Judith Jacobs. Joining me on the line from Terengganu today is Wong Chi Ho. He is the branch chairman of the Malaysian Nature Society's Terengganu branch, and we're discussing the Terengganu government's plans to degazette over 4,000 hectares of permanent forest reserves in the state to make way for palm oil plantations. So earlier we were, you know, discussing possible human-wildlife conflict, you know, from this degazetting. And another thing is flooding. Flooding happens a lot in Terengganu, if I'm not mistaken. And there's been so many studies done about how when forests are cut down, how that actually leads to increased flooding. Maybe you could explain that to people who don't quite know.
Oh yes. Because to most of the public, they might not aware, it's actually forest, it could be, first of all, it just act like a sponge that will absorb water during raining days. And then release it during the drought seasons. So, in other words, you can say is water catchment at some point, you know, where we can have water security to be safe. So we have the water supply most of the time. But once we have the forest removed, so it means that we no longer have that kind of effects when water will be absorbed, you know, the runoff and so on. So during rainy season, especially in the Ngano or on the east coast, so the water, the runoff might getting a little bit intense. So it's where get to the next, you know, human settlement and so on. It's where the flooding, so the river, the water level will raise and so on. So eventually it will flood to the nearby settlement and so on. So this is basically the very simple explanations why if one, we have the forest cleared, so we have even more of the flood event eventually.
It is a common occurrence in Terengganu. I mean, is it not that floods happen, especially during the monsoon season, for example?
Yeah. First of all, some areas, they might prone to have floods because of the location. Because sometimes throughout the history, I think in 100 years ago, that Actually, there's a prone to have floods. But if people moving in that place, means that it's actually we're asking for a problem. And anyway, along the time, people, the population actually increased. We have no choice, but we move to the area we think is actually suitable, but instead might be not the case. And especially this will become worse when we have the nearby forest lock and the water runoff and so on. So that makes the floods, it become worse.
So MNS Terengganu, for example, you are not against palm oil as a crop.
No.
You're not. So, you know, what are your kind of recommendations to the state of Terengganu? I understand that you both have a very good relationship.
The government is actually, there's always open up, you know, the door for discussions. And I'm sure that definitely in the coming future, I think in the short future, immediate, you know, they will again, we have a dialogue with them to see what's their plan. Actually, we can help and we can build a bridge to make, you know, whether there will be a better solution into these segments. Definitely, there are some other options that we can advise. For example, we can look for the what we call the buyer financing options. We can always can identify those degraded land to be used for the agricultural activities. And also, we can, you know, try in a way like ecotourism. We need to strengthen because we have the Kenya, this piece of the virgin forest that could be make into even we can intensify. You can intensify and further to make use of Kenya to become ecotourism spot and to generate revenue for the state. But we need to sit down and talk, you know, and come up with a solution that is actually environmental friendly.
And, you know, since you have actually come out and, you know, voiced your concern about all of this, have you actually tried to get in touch with the state government or have they reached out to you at all?
Yeah, I think soon we will have a dialogue. I believe that there's an internal kind of communication is happening.
Okay.
And together, we are not, but for sure, we are not acting alone. Together with the other NGO, you know, brainstorming and come up with ideas, and then we all come collectively to approach and dialogue with the state.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm quite sure that soon that we will have a dialogue with the state. I think they always listen to us.
Oh, okay. Because I was also reading that, you know, as part of this deal, Terengganu will replace the affected areas with other lands as forest reserve, and that TDM Berhad, I think they're set to make a payment of 250 ringgit per hectare per annum to a trust fund for wildlife conservation and conflict management. Do you think that is enough or, you know, we should just leave?
I'm not sure. Because 250 per hectare to come for the conservation fund, I think in different perspectives, actually, not really that enough in terms of the management, because the area is quite big.
Yeah.
We can't really expect what would happen.
Mm.
What would happen if the forest removes, and the cost to overcome this unforeseen event, it might be easily more than just 1 million. If even in some disastrous events, if we have you know, floods and so on, and human life loss. So that actually can't be measured.
Yeah, you can't really put a price on it like that, right?
Yeah, because we're afraid that the worst might involve like human life loss in terms of, like, you know, the flooding all the time. You have heard cases where people are drowned and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But this will be the worst scenario where human life loss and so on. But it's very hard to justify whether 1 point plus million it will be suitable. Because when you're talking about conservation, you're not talking about value, exact value that you could fork out and that will solve the problem. But it will actually open up and, you know, it's open up unended opening for the authority to tackle.
So, loss of human life as well. But like you said, you know, like there's priceless fauna to be found. Like you even mentioned the tigers there, right?
Yeah.
That our endangered, you know, Malayan tiger is found in the forest of Terengganu as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, because as we read a little more about the forest services, those what we call ecological functions or ecological services, which have not been able to put on price tag.
Yep.
For example, if we lock the forest, the science is actually we are cutting all the trees. It's actually producing oxygen.
Yep.
If you were to build the plant to generate oxygen, I don't think you can easily fork up that much of money just to build a much even you manage to build a plant, but not as efficient as a forest. So that's why we call the forest actually is a green lung. So cutting the forest, deforestation, in other words, we call it a green cancer.
Yep.
So it's quite, you know, quite sarcastic to call, you know, green cancer. Yeah. So, it's just an unfortunate event if the segments, will be, you know, go ahead with.
Okay, but there is some dialogue happening. I guess does that mean that everything is done, or there is still, you know, an avenue for discussion? There is still some, you know, chance of this not quite happening the way it is being planned out right now.
At the moment, as I say, if I'm not okay, I'm trying not to speculate. But I'm sure that the state will open up a dialogue, and we will come together with the other NGO soon. I think we should have a nice conversation both and come up with a solution. I'm sure that the state people, they are listening, and then it comes up, you know, in their own way, what type of solution that can comes up at this point, but before we meet each other soon.
Okay.
Oh, but yeah. I cannot tell you when. Because this article just came out just last week, I'm sure that it will take a little bit more time for this issue to be further elaborated internally in the state, and also for the NGO like Malaysian Nation Society Terengganu branch, together with the NGO, we still need to gather a little bit more information, especially on the forest reserve that to be planned for the degas segments, the Ketih Rasau, the Rasau Ketih, the Sungai Nipah Forest Reserve. Yeah, so we need to gather a little bit more information whether there are even significant wildlife or the flora or the fauna that could be found in that forest.
Okay, okay. So you've got quite a lot of work ahead of you there, Chiho.
Yeah, so that's why it's not just a one man effort. Yeah. I think we need to come up together with other team so we can make a better, you know, conversation or dialogue.
Yeah.
Comes up with the facts and so on and the options. Not really that easy, I think.
Yeah. But you know, just the whole act of degazetting forest reserves, that already, you know, a forest reserve, you know, you the implication that is not to be touched. So obviously, you know, these things should be discussed with the NGOs, with the conservationists, with the environmentalists. And I'm not sure if that happened. Would you know if that actually did?
I think it happened. But for that one, we have a dialogue just last month, actually, with our state, Debrasa, Darasif. We have a dialogue with them together with the NGO. Yeah, and we are suggesting, the time we heard the gas segment, we were suggesting the option, just as I say, the biofinancing, strengthen the ecotourism industry in Kenya and so on. And it's actually, it came out that they have even shortlisted for reserve, but that was, to us, we want to have no for reserve to be gazetted. That would be the best solution for everyone. But somehow that comes out, the article was the latest progress where they have a further reduced forest reserve area as compared to what we have discussed last December. Actually, we are in the loop with the state government to work out, because on the state and on the TDM side, for sure that they have their own, you know, plans for development and for the people, I think, for the job and for the revenue. But from our point of view, we're not against any development, we're not against any plantation, but we are proposing what we call the sustainable development, where we need to achieve the balance between the humans or the economic needs and with the nature, the ecosystem itself. If one side losing the balance, means that it's actually, it will cause, for sure, it's a negative impact. Either side, if you have less development, means that you will have, you know, poor in terms of the people, livelihood and so on. So eventually, it's not sustainable in that way. If we are keeping all the, you know, the resources, but we need to utilize the resources in a much sustainable way, so that we have suggested to the state, okay, these are the options that you could choose instead of make the statement, because no forest in the world that look or that stand the same.
Yes, for sure.
For us, 1% it might be okay, is insignificant value for us to, you know, 1%. Yeah, but 1%, when it's gone forever. There will be no replacement. There are no other forest similar that to be replaced, that particular forest. We never know the future prospect of the forest, especially those medicines and especially those services that we are not able to identify today, but not in the future. But future with the technology, advanced technology, that we can start to kind of like we can itemize the importance of the forest. And at that time, we might perhaps could further elaborate, okay, in terms of the money. If you say you want to lock the forest, how much our oxygen is going to lose, or what if we need to build an artificial plant to replace that function for oxygen production? Definitely will cost much more than the forest removal.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, but at this time, you know, that in our time, we are not able to do it. Yeah, because people are not seeing the direct or the indirect importance of the forest or the nature.
Yeah, I guess the value actually that there is in protecting natural heritage, you know, for like you mentioned earlier, ecotourism and, you know, just for our own health and well-being in the future, you know, because I guess it's also starting a dangerous trend, isn't it? If you start degazetting first today, it's 1%, you know, and it could potentially lead to more degazettement in the future. And, you know, where is that going to leave us?
Yeah, so this is what we see, the trend, yeah. The problem is people might not aware when the forest has been cleared, patch by patch.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, by patch, the time you realize that who stole my cheese? All gone. Yeah, and then who's to blame? Yeah, the authority now or the future? Yeah, it's not a blaming game, but I assume that everyone, now our generation, our future generations, you know, we actually borrow the piece of the forest from our future generations.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, if you want to think it's a more sustainable way, it's actually we are not owning the forest, we're not owning the nature, but we are borrowing from our future generations. We need to keep that forest, the nature, you know, in a good shape before we pass it to our future generation, whether it's an immediate or a long future in, you know, in time.
Yeah.
So this concept, but not really many people buy the story, you know, that's the thing.
Unfortunately.
Because people are living now, they want to enjoy, you know, they are enjoying the fast and furious.
Yeah.
So eventually we might crash at the end of the future.
Yeah, because
when all this nature crash, yeah.
Yeah, because you can't keep using up our resources, which are finite, you know, one day it's going to finish and then where are we going to be?
Yeah, but actually we are already finished. If you read the articles, you know, if we base on the average American lived, the lifestyle, then actually we need 2.5 Earth today.
Yeah, we are in overshoot, exactly.
To spend our lifetime, just like the Americans.
Yeah.
But we are spending less. But I think we already passed the age, just I think a few months ago, where we would require more than one Earth to support the average lifestyle of all the human beings on Earth.
Yep.
It's actually happening now. Yeah. We are living on our debt now.
They call it Earth overshoot, right?
So,
yeah.
So this is how it sounds serious, but most people, the thing is, we kind of like a frog in a hot pot. You know the story?
Yes, I do.
Okay,
so at least there is some dialogue going on. So, I mean, but for anyone listening, you know, what sort of support do you think, you know, we could give, or, you know, what sort of things can somebody who's listening, what can they possibly do to help?
At this time, we still need to work out with the state together with the NGO. I'm sure that the support from the public, the voice, again, their concern about a forest, even though you're living far away from Terengganu, is on the East Coast, we have nothing to deal with, you know. But I think we cannot escape. We're still living on Malaysia. We're still living on the earth.
Yep,
if we have one patch of the forest, means that we have one piece of the green lung not to be replaced. So it means that at this point, we need at least the public to be notified and look get aware of this issue. And then they should sound their support to us and also to the state government. Cannot to degazette our forested land, but instead we can work hand in hand, even though it takes a bit more time. I'm not sure for the company like the TDM, they might have their own, because they're profit oriented, so they need to show to their stakeholder, okay, the profit they're going to make, so to make it sustainable for the company from themselves. So everyone have his own agenda. So, but anyway, I think with the support from the public, we can make everyone sit side by side and try to solve this problem. If it's not for one for all, but at least for this time, we can set kind of like, you know, a consensus where we could work either NGO with the state, with the private sector, private and the public sector, with the NGO, and we can help to preserve the environment, the forest, at the same time, and we still can achieve development and economic growth at the same time to have a win-win situation. So win-win situation is very important for all. So we think at this point we need the support, especially not to come, not actually like, a physical support, but as a morale, a support, not to us as well, but to every party on this case to achieve the sustainable development.
All right. Thank you so much, Chee Ho, for explaining that to us. I've been speaking to Wong Chee Ho. He is the Malaysian Nature Society's Terengganu branch chairman. And we were discussing the degazetting of forest reserves for oil, for palm oil plantations over in Terengganu. If you missed any part of this interview or if you'd like to hear any previous interviews on Earth Matters, do download the BFM app on either Google Play or the App Store. This has been Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.